I want to quote you a statement made by the prophet Isaiah. Now, there are a couple of expressions in that statement that I've mentioned from time to time in trying to preach the gospel, but there's a particular expression there that I've not tried to use in speaking to God's people before, and I hope what I have to say tonight will be as new to me as it is to you. But we come to Isaiah chapter 64, verse 6, he says, "But we're all as an unclean thing." And he says, "And all our righteousnesses are as filthy rags." Most of us have heard that expression or quoted that expression. And there's a temptation to quote it, "But all our righteousness are as filthy rags." But it says our righteousnesses. That's sometimes hard to say. But all our righteousnesses, different types of righteousness, our righteousnesses are as filthy rags. And I believe I've spoken to God's people in this country sometime in the past that there are several different types of righteousness that are taught in the Bible. The Apostle Paul will mention about three of them in Philippians chapter 3, when he says, "And not having mine own righteousness, which is of the law." There is a legal righteousness that God's people could offer to the Lord. That is, you might say, "Lord, I'm keeping the commandments. I'm keeping all those commandments that you've given, but that's not acceptable before the Lord." It says, all our righteousnesses. Then in addition to that, we have our self-righteousness. And the Apostle Paul says, "And not having mine own righteousness," he says, "which is of the law, but the righteousness which is of faith." And he says, "It's even by the faith of Jesus Christ." So the only righteousness that we can offer before the Lord is the imputed righteousness of our Savior, the Son of God.
Amen.
We could not offer our righteousnesses before the Lord. That is, legal righteousness, our own self-righteousness, moral righteousness, anything you could lay before the Lord is not acceptable. He says, all our righteousnesses are as filthy rags. The Bible tells us that we owed a debt of 10,000 talents and had nothing to pay. The Bible tells us that we are nothing less than nothing in the sight of God. And in my early days in school, in the first types of math that they taught me, the first classes I had in math, I came to the assumption back then that zero was as low as you could go. And I remember as a youngster hearing preachers speak about people being nothing less than nothing. And since I'd only been taught to go down to zero, I wondered how you could be nothing less than nothing, because I thought zero was the bottom. Well, early in life I married, and before long I owed a few people, and I found out what it was to be nothing less than nothing. And one of the happiest days in my life was when I was broke. Although I was broke, I had everybody paid. I didn't know anybody. I didn't know a soul. I didn't have anybody. I didn't have anything, excuse me, but I didn't know anybody. How happy I was. Because for a short while in my life, I knew what it was to be nothing less than nothing, that is, to owe something. And finally, when I came up to zero, what a happy young man I was. The Bible tells us we're nothing less than nothing. That's a zero with the ring kicked off. Now, since you owe a debt of 10,000 talents and have nothing to pay, since you're nothing less than nothing in the sight of God, let us suppose that you have a note for $50,000 that's due at one of these banks tomorrow, and they're about to foreclose. They're going to take your automobile, your home, your property, whatever you have. They're about to foreclose on you. And you went down there in the morning and told the banker, "I'm ready to settle with you. I want to pay some on what I owe." "What do you intend to pay?" "Well, I have parked out in the street a big truckload of filthy rags." You suppose he'd accept that? Here's this great debt that we owe the Lord. And all we could offer our righteousnesses are as filthy rags in his sight. He said, "But we're all an unclean thing." There's all our righteousnesses. See, there's a temptation to say it wrong. All our righteousnesses, moral righteousness, legal righteousness, personal righteousness, self-righteousness, however you want to label it, it's as filthy rags in the sight of God. And he says that we all do fade as a leaf. And he says our iniquities, like the wind, have carried us away. The last part of that scripture is new to me as far as trying to preach it to God's people from the pulpit. But what I want to deal with is this expression that after telling us that we're all as an unclean thing and all our righteousnesses are filthy rags in the sight of God, he says we all do fade as a leaf. And he says, our iniquities, like the wind, have carried us away. He says there that we do fade as a leaf. Have you ever considered that leaves do not fade away the same? Have you ever thought about that? He says, we all do fade as a leaf. Yet leaves do not fade the same. And all of God's people, even though they're all under the curse of sin, we do not all fade from this world the same way. I find that sometimes I go out in the early spring of the year. The trees have just budded out. Here's the tender leaves of springtime. And if nature followed its course, those leaves would live through the springtime. That is, they would grow and develop, and they would mature into the leaves of summer. And then in the summertime, they have a job to do. Those leaves, through a process called photosynthesis, will draw energy from the sun and cause that plant to grow. They will feed it. Those leaves have a job to do. And according to nature, these leaves of springtime have a life or a course ahead of them to where they will live through the summer and do their wonderful work. And then they will begin to fade in the autumn, and generally toward the end of the autumn they will fall. This is the course of nature. We see it year after year. Yet at the same time, most all of us know what it is to go out in the spring of the year after there's been a storm or maybe a hail. I see this quite often. We go out in the spring of the year, and here'll be a tree, and there'll be quite a few of these little tender leaves that are on the ground. These tender leaves of springtime have fallen. And we would have to say this is an untimely thing. This is something that's out of season. It's untimely. And I find in the sixth chapter of Revelation that the Apostle John speaks of a time when he says the stars of heaven fell. And he says they were like a fig tree that casteth forth her untimely figs when she's shaken of a mighty wind. If you look in the center column, it says green figs. Here's the fig tree that has these green figs on it. These are the little figs of springtime. And a mighty wind comes along, and this tree casts off those figs. Now, according to nature, those figs should stay there. They should stay there and fully grow and finally ripen. Go through a season where they will ripen, and then they'll reach the time of harvest. But he says that the stars of heaven fell, and he said they were like a fig tree that casteth forth her untimely figs, or green figs, when she's shaken of a mighty wind. There are a number of things that the Bible speaks of as untimely. And I ask you this question tonight. If God has predestinated and unchangeably fixed from the foundation of the world all things that take place here on this earth, how can anything be said to be untimely?
Right.
There are some things that the Bible says are untimely. Someone may be asking me right now, well, doesn't God know all things? Yes, God knows all things. But there is a divine view of things, there's God's view of things, and there's our view of things. And I have held this to God's people once in a while because to me it illustrates the point, and it's the experience I had in life that I'll never forget. But when I was about 13 years of age, my mother instructed me to walk a good distance, a lot farther than people would walk today, that she instructed me to walk a good distance into a town near where we live. I was to go to a certain place to where there was a dentist. And I remember as a youngster walking this distance, going in the dentist's office, sitting down, and didn't see anybody in there. And I began to pick up some magazines to read. And I heard a voice seemingly come, it seemed like it came through the wall, said, put those magazines down, come on in here, I'm waiting on you. I got up, went through a door, went in, sat down in the dentist's chair. And when I looked back over toward the direction where I had been, there was a clear glass. In that little room, I had walked in, and the way I saw it, there was a mirror. I walked in his office, started picking up magazines, looked over here, there was a mirror. But there was a voice came through that mirror, said, put those magazines down, come in here, I'm waiting on you. When I got on the dentist's side of it, there was clear glass. That was my first experience in life with mirrors of that kind. I did not know they existed. I've thought about that mirror now for about 45 years. I've given lots of thought to it. Because as I looked at that mirror, all I could see would be myself and the things around me reflecting back at me. On the other side, there was a dentist who could see straight through it. And my friends, when we think about the problems of life and the things that go on in this world, as we look at them and study them, sometimes the problems and difficulties of life just reflect right back at us. But on the other side of those things, there's a God that sees all the way through them. God sees the trial you're in. God sees the end of it. God sees the solution to it. God sees the final outcome. And I say over and over and over to the church I've pastored for better than 33 years, God always knows what he's doing. The rest of us very seldom ever do. Just mark that one down. I find that he tells the Apostle Peter in Luke chapter 22, after Peter and these brethren had been in a wrangle about who would be the greatest among them. Now, isn't that a pretty picture? Here's the servants of God are in a wrangle about who will be the greatest among them. That very night, Jesus got down and washed those disciples' feet. Yes, I can prove with the Bible it was that very night. The very night that those disciples were filled with self-esteem and worrying about who would be the greatest among them, Jesus got down and washed the disciples' feet in the greatest display of humility that this earth has ever seen. And when Peter's in this frame of mind, he said, Simon, Simon, Satan hath desired to have you, that he may sift you as wheat, but I have prayed for thee that thy faith fail thee not. Did you notice he did not say, Peter, I have prayed that your faith will not be tried? Now, some of us who are overindulgent love our children and grandchildren so much that if we could have our way, they'd never have a problem. That's why we wash all their dishes, wash all their clothes, make all their beds, you know, try to make life easy on them because we don't want them to have a problem. We're overindulged. Now, the Lord did not say, Peter, because I love you so much, I'm going to see to it that your faith is not tried. He said, I have prayed for thee that thy faith fail not. Your faith is going to be tried. You're going into the trial. But he said, I'm going to see to it that in the trial that your faith does not fail. The Lord saw Peter in the trial. He saw Peter coming out of the trial. And he says, and when thou art converted, that is when you're converted from this attitude of who will be the greatest in the kingdom of heaven, when you get cured of that. He said, I have prayed for thee that thy faith fail thee not, and when thou art converted, strengthen thy brethren. All Peter could see when the trial came, all Peter could see is the trial. He's like me looking into the mirror. He just sees it reflecting back at him. But the Lord can see Peter in the trial. He can see him overcoming the trial. He can see him converted from this bad attitude he has. And he can see Peter later strengthening other brethren that are in like trials. That's why the Bible tells us in 1 Samuel chapter 16, verse 7, the Lord seeth not as man seeth, for man looks on the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart. God knows all things. He is declaring, Isaiah 46, he is declaring the end from the beginning and from ancient times things that are not yet done. But from our human standpoint, there are things that the Bible describes as untimely. For this fig tree to cast these green figs, it says here, she cast her untimely figs. That is, she cast green figs to the ground. There is such a thing in the Bible as an untimely birth. We go to Job chapter 3, verse 16, and Job says, or as a hidden untimely birth I have not been, as infants. That does not say an infant, meaning one in particular. It means infants in general. Or as a hidden untimely birth I have not been, as infants which never saw light. Question, where are these infants that never saw light? Job says they are where the wicked cease from troubling and where the weary be at rest. Someone says, well, that doesn't say heaven. Well, it sure beats Tennessee. And it sure beats Texas. And according to what I read in the Bible, there is no peace to the wicked. The wicked are like the troubled sea. There is no peace to the wicked. These infants that never saw light are where the wicked cease from troubling and where the weary be at rest. That's good enough for me. I'll take it any day. Or as a hidden untimely birth I have not been, as infants which never saw light. He says we all do fade as a leaf. And there are individuals that are born in this world that die in infancy. Or they die as small children. And I'm going to refer to them as the leaves of springtime. I'm going to have to refer to their deaths as untimely deaths. There was a time last year, July a year ago, that I conducted the funeral of a little 4.5-year-old girl, most beautiful child I've ever seen, just 1 month older than my youngest granddaughter. This child was involved in an automobile accident, was in a coma for 6 days. I was at the Cook Children's Hospital in Fort Worth every day with her young parents. And finally, they took the life support systems loose because they told the family, we are not prolonging life, we're just delaying death. I preached that child's funeral. Several hundred people were present. It was one of the saddest occasions of my entire life. Because here was this little casket, and hundreds of people went past it, and the little child had their Cabbage Patch doll and a couple other things in there exactly like my grandchildren play with. My friends, you're seeing here an untimely death. You're seeing here one of the leaves of springtime. He said we all do fade as leaves, but leaves do not fade the same. And most everybody in this congregation, if you reach out very far, you have lost people in your families, perhaps in infancy, perhaps in childhood. These are like the leaves that you go out in the springtime, and the trees are all blossomed out, but here comes the storm, here comes the early spring hail, and here are some of the leaves that are on the ground in the springtime. We see other leaves that live on into the summer. They come over here to full maturity. Here are these leaves of summer that, as I said a while ago, they're absorbing the sunlight. They're given strength and food. They're engaged in the very productivity that nature or God Almighty intended that they engage in. But then something happens in the summertime. Once again, maybe you have a powerful wind. Maybe you have a hailstorm. Something happens in the summertime, and sometimes there are leaves that fall to ground in the summer. And I have seen in my lifetime people that left this world in the very prime of life. As a young man in my home church, August a year ago, soon be 2 years. And this brother was a spiritual spark plug at our church. He was a young man that when he joined the church as a recruit. He had the power to influence other people to come with him. And I'd call on him to offer prayer, and in his prayers he could melt down the congregation, and he would pray out and beg God that his boys and all the young people in my home church would listen to every word that Brother Sonny has to say. He's one of these people you don't meet very often. One of these people that can light up a building, you know, by coming in. Dynamic, enthused. He thought he'd found the jewel of the earth. He had been raised up in another order of people, and when he saw the truth and the identity of the old Baptist church, he was the happiest person. I've never seen a happier person. That young man was working on with the power company and was electrocuted and killed August, soon be 2 years ago. Here was somebody that was taken out of this world in the very fullness of his strength. Here's some of the leaves of summertime. Now then, when I speak of some of these things, according to the Bible, these things are described as untimely. There's an untimely birth. There's also an untimely death. You say, well, I thought everybody had a set and appointed time to die and couldn't die before your time. Well, surely you haven't been reading the Bible lately. Because I come to the 8th chapter of Ecclesiastes, about verses 11, 12, and 13. And Solomon mentioned some things here, and he said that don't do too much of this. He says, be not thou righteous over much. You say, what does that mean? You mean people can be too righteous? I'll get back to that in a minute. He says, be not overwise. That is, don't be too smart. He says, be not thou overmuch wicked. The same man just told you don't be too righteous, says don't be too wicked. Are you confused? We're going to get more confused before it's over. He says, neither be thou foolish, for why shouldst thou die before thy time? Bible question, why should you die before your time? Solomon says, be not thou overmuch righteous. That is, don't be too righteous. Well, you see, back in that day, the way a lot of people showed off their righteousness was engaging in fasting. That was a part of religion back in that day. Folks that were wanting to show off how righteous they were, they went on fast. I mean, the longer, the more righteous you were. That's why the Lord told his disciples, he says, when you fast, he says, don't put on a sad face and go around telling everybody that I'm fasting. That's why I've got such a sad countenance. Get out of my way, I'm fasting. He tells you, when you fast, keep it yourself. You say, well, is fasting good for people? From a medical standpoint, it probably would be good for people to fast once in a while. Probably would be. I cannot teach it, and no other preacher can teach it as a way of Bible commandment. But if there's some individual in the church that you, of your own will, feel like you'd like to fast, to do without things like that, maybe to help your body, or maybe to engage in spiritual things, that's your business, and keep it as your business. Because, but you see, back at that day, there were people who went on these long fasts, and went around long faces, trying to convince people how righteous they were. Well, if you recognize you could go too far with that and starve to death, be not thou righteous over much. I'm going to add something to that. If you take a stand for the Lord, if you let it be known that I believe in the Bible, that I believe in Jesus Christ, that I believe in the old Baptist church, if you take a stand and let people know it, that you're trying to stand for Bible principles, the devil will try to lead you in one of two directions so you'll have no influence. The devil will try to lead you this way. You take a stand for the truth, so the devil will try to lead you this way. The devil will try to turn you into a self-righteous Pharisee standing up so straight, you're leaning over backwards, and then you turn everybody off.
Yeah.
I've been around people that tried to impress me, how good they were, how righteous they were, by telling me what all they didn't do. And I've noticed most all my life that whenever I get around religious hypocrites, they usually boast mostly about what they don't do. You know, I don't smoke, don't chew, I don't have anything of them to do, don't smoke, don't drink, don't chew, I don't eat pork meat, I don't go to movies, I don't watch TV, I don't swim, I don't affiliate with these folks over here, I don't this, I don't that, I don't. Well, sometimes I get around people like that and I'm standing there bewildered, well, what do you do? Now then, you take a stand for the truth, and the Lord will try to turn, the devil will try to turn you into a Pharisee, a self-righteous Pharisee, and then you won't have any influence. You'll have no influence, because nobody wants to be influenced by somebody like that. Now, if the devil can't pull you in that direction, the devil will turn you into a hypocrite. Here's somebody that lives one life before God's people, then goes home and lives another way. Here's somebody that lives one life before God's people and maybe another life at work or another life at home. Here's somebody that's a hypocrite. You'll lose your influence with your own children. I've known folks that were leaders in the Lord's churches, and I've had their own children tell me later after they grew up that the reason they never joined the church was Mama or Daddy carried on one way at the house and another way up at the house of God. I've had grown people tell me that. The devil try to turn you into a Pharisee, pull you this way, a self-righteous Pharisee, or he try to turn you into a hypocrite, and either way you can't influence people. Be not thou righteous over much. He says, be not over wise. Well, I find hardly, we find in Romans chapter 12, verse 3, it says, let every man think soberly. He said, let not a man think more highly of himself than he ought. The Bible teaches us that we should not think ourselves more highly than we ought. Some people are too wise in their own estimation. He said, be not overmuch wicked. I don't have to explain that to people. Be not foolish. Why shouldst thou die before your time? According to the Bible, you can die before your time. You say, well, what in the world does that mean? Let's go to the 55th Psalm, verse 23. Solomon says, bloody and deceitful men shall not live out half their days. You mean nobody dies till the time comes when the Bible says, bloody and deceitful men shall not live out half their days? You say, well, what in the world does that mean? Well, medical science agrees, it's beyond dispute. One of the main factors in longevity is heredity. The key to longevity, they say, is to carefully pick your ancestors. Well, you know, that's impossible to do. But what I'm describing in this is simply this. There are some people who are born in the world very strong. Some people are born in the world very strong. They're born in the world with very good genes. And I've seen some of these people violate all the so-called rules of health. And they lived a long time, and they never were sick. I have a book at home written by a group of very outstanding doctors, and they make the statement in there that there are some people there are some people that are born in the world, they're so genetically strong, they're born so strong, that it doesn't make much difference how they live, they're probably going to live a long time and be very healthy. There is a percentage of people that are born genetically with such a, I'll put it in language most people use, they're born with such a strong constitution that they can drink, dip, smoke, do it all, probably never be sick and live a long time. There's other people that are born in the world, they're born in the world very weak, and they can practice the best health habits possible, and they'll probably be sick most of their lives. These doctors went on to say that we like to feel that most people are somewhere in the middle. And we try to come up with things that will help most people. Well, I can tell you about the folks in my family. They live past 91 years of age, did stuff every day, did worse than that, raised pain every day. You say, well, you've got to think positive, live a long time. No, I'm talking about people in my family, raised cane every day, dipped snuff every day, washed it down with lots of good beer and whiskey, lived past 91 years of age, never were sick. You say, sure had some bad habits, but had some good genes. Now watch this. There are some folk that are just born weak. They're born very weak. The sickest people you'll find in any town are down here hanging around health food stores. That's right. I go on health food stores every once in a while. The sickest people in town are around the health food stores. Healthiest people in town are down here at the gymnasium pumping iron. You ever notice that? Strange, isn't it? Now watch this. He said, bloody and deceitful men shall not live out half their days. I want you to think for me just a minute that here's a young man, or we'll take a group of young men, they're born in the world, they're physically and genetically strong. They've got the constitution to live 80 or 90 years. You see that? Genetically strong. They have the genetics. They have the potentiality. They have it in their genes. They have the constitution to live 80 or 90 years. But these men we're talking about make a habit of hanging around in bars. They make a habit of picking lots of fights. As one old cowboy said, I have my nose broken in three places till I learn to stay away from those places. You'll catch it in a minute. Now, they hang around in places, they drink, they pick fights. They're around people who pack guns and knives. And they're killed at 25 or 30 years of age. You know what happened, Mark? Bloody and deceitful men shall not live out half their days. They have the potentiality to live a long time. Bloody and deceitful men shall not live out half their days. Now watch this. I saw a sign here, first time I ever came in this country, long years ago, first time I ever came in this country. I saw a sign on a church billboard down around Lewisburg. It says, if you do not want to eat the fruits of sin, stay out of the orchard. That's true. That's very true. Bloody and deceitful men shall not live out past their days. You may be the healthiest young man in Middle Tennessee. Your doctor may have said you have a strong, rugged constitution, and you've got what it takes to live to be 85 or 90 years of age. But I assure you, you can hang out in the beer joints and the bars and hang out in the wrong places and pick fights. Pair of knives and guns around, and you may be laid on the slab before you're 25 years of age. That's the teaching of the Bible.
Amen.
There's such a thing, according to the Bible, as an untimely death.
Right.
There is such a thing in the Bible as an untimely birth. Now then, as we look at, he says, we all do fade as a leaf. There are the leaves of springtime. These are babies that die in infancy. These are little children that are taken away from us at 2 and 3 years of age. This is my wife's little sister that long ago, 16 months old, drowned in the neighbor's lily pond next door. The leaves of springtime. We think about people that we know that have died in the summertime, the very prime of life. Now we come to the autumn. As we think about the autumn, or what's called the fall of life, in your section of the country, and on in the eastern part of the state, and going on up into the north, and I'd have to say the most beautiful part of the United States I've ever seen in the fall has not been East Tennessee, no offense, but it's been the Shenandoah Valley of Virginia and places on up in Pennsylvania and way up there. Some of the most beautiful scenes I've ever seen. I can't imagine anything being any prettier than Smoky, but I have seen some of that far northern country at times when, to me, it was even more beautiful than anything I've seen here. Now watch this. After all, what makes that season of the year so beautiful?
It is because the leaves fade differently. If they all faded the same, it wouldn't strike. They fade differently.
I was on a plane one time with a man from Canada. Well, when you start talking about Canada, you're talking about a broad region, but he was from a particular province in Canada. And I asked him this question. It was the fall of the year. We were talking about the beautiful fall foliage. I said, what's the fall like where you live? He said, in my particular province of Canada, he said, we have one tree, one main tree. And he said, it turns gold in the fall. And he says, it's really not all that pretty. Because, he said, everything just turns into solid gold. It's just a world of gold. Well, I tried to imagine that, but the same time that I was preaching up in northern Wisconsin. And up in northern Wisconsin and Minnesota, I saw that very thing in some areas. Had just one dominant type of tree, and in the fall of the year, they all turn the same color. They all turn gold. I got very tired of looking at gold. My friend, the fall is beautiful because these leaves are different colors. They don't all fade the same.
Wow.
And as we begin to think about folks, according to nature, you're supposed to reach the fall of the year if you live out your time here on this earth. And as we come to the fall of the year, we all do fade as a leaf. People don't fade out the same. There are people that you know that when they come to the time of year when they begin to fade out of this world, there are people that fade out with good hearing. Some people fade out with good hearing. They've got sharp minds, but they're broken down in body. They're moving around with canes, moving around with walkers. They're very slow in their movements. But they're as mentally alert as any of them. Good hearing, good mental alertness. There's others that we see when they come to this time of life, they're still fit in body. But some of these folks still don't have any particular body problems. Their health is not too bad. They get around pretty well. But a lot of them can't hear anymore. And we see some folks that the first thing about them that begins to slip, their mind begins to slip. There's a couple of things like Alzheimer's and hardening the arteries and things like that. It's been a real mystery to me and pastor of the church for about 33 years, also knowing, you know, hundreds of people over the country like this, to be around some folks. And when it comes to this time of life that we're supposed to start fading out of this world, to get around people that are fading out of this world that are 75, 80, 85 years of age, and these folks, some of them can hear better than I can. Some of them just as mentally sharp as any of you. And yet, as I say, some of these people have chains, some of them in wheelchairs. You see other folks, as I have described a while ago, that maybe bodily they're not too bad off, but their memory's slipping. Their eyesight's fading. People don't all say the same. Have you ever considered that if old age was the same experience for all of us, this would be a very boring life? It'd be a very boring life. We don't fade out of this world some. But there are some things that ought to be displayed in all of God's people as we come to this fall of life. It says we all do fade as a leaf. And my friends, if this world continues, if the Lord doesn't come back as soon as I think he's going to come back, if the Lord doesn't come back, you're going to fade, and you're going to fade, and then some of you brethren over here younger are going to fade. And one of these days, I may even fade out myself. But watch this. Have you ever noticed that these leaves that I'm talking about, they become the most beautiful? They put on their real glory just before they fall and fade away? You'd have to say that's the prettiest season of all. I don't think anybody would argue with me on that point. That here is where the leaves really put on their beauty and they really display their glory. It's just before the winter time comes, just before they check out. You ever thought about that? You know what that teaches me? That teaches me that all of God's people should try to grow in grace and in the knowledge of the truth until you are the loveliest person you have ever been in your later years. The Bible teaches us in the 16th chapter of Proverbs, verse 31, it says, that hoary head, that white head, is a crown of glory if it be found in the way of righteousness. And my friends, it's bad when people of any age use filthy language. But I can tolerate, I can get around some young man or over here some young woman, somebody over here using filthy language, I can sort of tolerate that. Because I've got a hope that, you know, that person will grow up and one of these days they'll see the nonsense of that and they'll clean up their act. A lot of people have, you know. Yeah, they'll see just how dumb this is. They'll clean up their act and they'll do better. It's kind of irritating in a young person, but I can put up with it because I've got a hope for them. But there is something that is especially disgusting and revolting when you get around some real old person that has got a filthy, filthy mouth. Something revolting about that. That hoary head is a crown of glory if it be found in the way of righteousness. If it be found in the way of righteousness. There's lots of things that when you see these things in young people, while it's bad enough, you maybe you've got some hope that this person's going to grow out of it, you know, they'll get better. But when you see some older person, and that older person is eaten up with jealousy, that older person has a temper they cannot control. I mean, they are cranky. I mean, they're just the devil on wheels. There's something about that that's particularly disgusting. It's disgusting to me to see a drunk young person. And we're citizens of a nation that is drinking herself to death. There's lots of drinking in America in the public streets, in what I call elementary schools. It starts down early. Drinking is just a way of life in high school. It's disgusting to see a young drunk. But I've had a lot of experience in my life with old drunks. They are especially disgusting. My friends, if there's ever a time of life when we should have learned something and ought to be putting on our best, it's in the fall of life. A jealous young preacher is an ugly sight. But there's nothing any more disgusting than a jealous old preacher that's trying to put other preachers down. Because, brother, you've had your life. You've had your opportunity here. Can't you sit back and encourage people and try to work for love, peace, and unity among God's people? My dear friends, it's time in life that some of us brethren who've got a little gray hair on us, that we recognize that we need to be setting a better example for these brethren that are younger than we are than some people set for us. Now listen, that hoary head is a crown of glory if it be found in the way of righteousness. My friends, when we come to the fall of life, that should be that time of life when we are the most charitable. It should be that time of life when we are the most patient. That time in life when we are the most understanding. The time of life when we are the most understanding to younger people that are fighting the struggles of life that we have already fought. The time of life when we ought to be encouraging other people. And my friends, I pray to God, and I'm not old yet, I just started young, but I pray to God that when that day comes for me, if I ever reach that point of life where I'm about to fade at least, I hope it's not said to me, well, be glad when he dies, because when he dies, there'll be some old Baptists and some churches get together. I could stand up here right now if I wanted to embarrass people, and I could talk to you about sections of the country where people were kept apart until certain people died. And then when those people died, there was a great get-together, and people began to live in peace and have a wonderful time. I hope that's not said of me. I hope it can be said of me that I've worked among God's people for peace. I've worked among God's people for unity. I have worked among God's people to promote goodwill. How will you be remembered? Take that home and think about it a little while. He says we all do fade as a leaf. People don't fade out for something. But it should be a time. It should be a time when people are showing their best. Showing your best to your wife for 40, 50 years. Showing your best to your grandchildren. It should be a time when people are showing their best. Surely, after all these years, we should have learned a little control over temper. We ought to learn a little control over discouragement and the things that plagued us and bothered us when we were young. Now then, sometimes after the fall is over, this is a very common thing in Texas where I live, but sometimes after the fall is over, the leaves are on the ground, and we're in what's called the cold dead of winter. Sometimes you go out in the wintertime, And here being old Texas pecan tree, post oak tree, and way up in the air on this tree, there's two or three leaves left. All the rest of them are gone. Be two or three leaves up there still left on in the wintertime. These are folks that live to be 95 or 100 years of age. And you say, well, what a great blessing. Sometimes I feel sorry for them. I remember back when I was a very young preacher, when the times came, my first calls came to preach the funerals of real old people. I'm talking about, you know, people lived up in the 90s. I said, well, there'll be a great big congregation there today. In many cases, I found a very small congregation. I won't say in all cases, but I'd have to say most. I found smaller groups. I didn't understand that, but I started thinking about it. A lot of these people had outlived their children. A lot of these people had outlived some, maybe all of their children. These people had outlived their brothers and sisters. They had outlived their friends. They had outlived their generation. They had outlived those who had known them at their very best. And no doubt these people were very lonely. No doubt they spent a lot of time reminiscing in the past, because the people they had loved and the things they had loved were all gone. My wife's dad lived well past 99. And even though he loved those of us who had died, yet most of his memories were way back in the past. And he spent lots of time back there talking about them, and we enjoyed it. It was educational to us. I'm the pastor of a good old brother at home that if he lives till July the 8th, which isn't very long, he'd be 99 years of age. He was born 7/8/98. Soon be 99 years of age. His generation's gone. His wife, the mother of his children, is gone. Generation of people's gone. And I know it's a great honor to live to be 95 or 100. I know that, but there's some loneliness here. Here's these old leaves of winter. But even if you become one of those old leaves of winter, if God allows you to live to be 105 or 110, one of these days you're going to fade also. You don't see any people around 500 or 1,000 years old, do you? Sooner or later, we're going to fade. We all do fade as a leaf. Maybe like a leaf of springtime, maybe in the prime of life in the summer, maybe if most of us leave this world in the fall, there'll be some that'll hang on long after their friends are gone. We all do fade as doth a leaf. But my friends, I'm looking forward to a place where we'll never fade. I find that Psalms 1, verse 1 says, blessed is the man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor sitteth in the seat of the scornful. It says, watch this. Blessed is the man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor standeth in the way of sinners, nor sitteth in the seat of the scornful. But his delight is in the law of the Lord, and in his law doth he meditate day and night. And he shall be like a tree that is planted by the rivers of water. His leaf also shall not wither. Seneca says, fade. And whatsoever he doeth shall prosper. We sing a hymn that there's a place where the roses never fade. There's also a place where the leaves will never fade. But in this world, we're going to fade away. You know what that teaches me? That teaches me that we ought to do everything we can to honor the Lord and to benefit his people every day that we live. And I said this to the brethren today, said it to Brother Stovall at lunch, and I will say it to you tonight. I have had so many experiences lately with people around me that are close to me that have had their lives, everything in this life, just jerked out from under them, just like that. I could give you some specific examples. People very close to me. Seemed like that they were at a point where they could really enjoy life. Seemed like things were going very well for them. I could talk to you about a family I pastored. That one little tap on a brake pedal with a car going over a puddle of water. One little tap of the brake pedal, a car, short wheelbase, front wheel drive vehicle, hydroplanes, goes down into a deep ravine, up like this, crashes into a big tree. A little 4.5-year-old girl dies as a result of that. The other girl in the family is left permanently. things changed in a split second. With the tap of a brake pedal, a hydroplaned automobile, and in a few seconds, their world turned upside down. I can talk to you about another man who's not all that old, very close to being, that according to medical science has been given less than 6 months to live. Has seven children. Less than 6 months to live. It looks like he's at the very point of life where he could first begin to enjoy life. Father, his first grandchild. First grandchild just came along a little over a year ago. Now is told that he has less than 6 months to live. Your very world can be taken out from under you at the very several things. You know what that teaches me? That teaches me that we should live every day to the fullest.
That we should draw out every day, draw out every day every good thing that we can, and live it to the honor and glory of God. This is the day that the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. I have been brought so far in life that I did not save as one of the leaders in springtime. I did not save as one of the leaders in summer. I don't know whether I'd be considered in the late summer or the fall of life. Having that one thing in the help of God, I can take you to this day. But I don't know if there's 40 seconds left for me or 40 years in the year. But one thing is for certain. In this world, we're going to fail. Yes. Let us use the strength we have to the honor and glory of God.